Chapter 6. The Atrocity Archives. 3 days flick by like microfiche cards through the input hopper of Angleton's Memex. Mo has settled into the vacant room on the second floor of our safe house like a long-term resident. As a not very senior academic, her PhD years not long behind her, she probably spent years in flat chairs like this. I focus on my day-to-day work, fixing broken network servers, running a security audit of some service department's kit, 2 illicit copies of Minesweeper, and 1 MP3 music jukebox to eliminate, and spending the afternoons up in the secure office in the executive suite, learning the Bible of field operations by heart. I try not to think about what I'm getting Mo into. In fact, I try not to see her at all, spending long hours into the evening poring over arcane regulations and petty incantations for coordinating joint task force operations. I feel more than a little bit guilty, even though I'm only obeying orders, and consequently, I feel a little bit depressed. At least Mary doesn't try to get in touch. The Sunday before we're due to leave, I have to stay home because I need to pack my bags. I'm dithering over a stack of t-shirts and an electric toothbrush when someone knocks on my bedroom door. Bob? I open it. Mo. She steps inside, hesitant, eyes scanning. My room often has that effect on people. It's not the usual single male scattering of clothes on every available surface, aggravated by my packing, so much as the groaning, double-stacked bookcase and the stuff on the walls. Not many guys have anatomically correct, life-sized plastic skeletons hanging from a wall bracket, or a desk made out of Lego bricks with the bits of 3 half-vivisected computers humming and chattering to each other on top of it. "Are you packing?" she asks, smiling brightly at me. She's dressed up for a night out with some lucky bastard, and here's me wondering when I last changed my t-shirt and looking forward to a close encounter with a slice of toast and a tin of baked beans. But the embarrassment only lasts for a moment until her wondering gaze settles in the direction of the bookcase. Then, "Is that a copy of Knuth?" She homes in on the top shelf. "Hang on, Volume 4? But he only finished the first 3 volumes in that series. Volume 4's been overdue for the past 20 years. "Yep," I nod smugly. Whoever she's dating won't have anything like that on his shelves. "We, or the Black Chamber, have a little agreement with him. He doesn't publish Volume 4 of The Art of Computer Programming, and they don't render him metabolically challenged. At least he doesn't publish it to the public. It's the one with a Turing theorem in it. Phase conjugate grammars for extra-dimensional summoning. This is a very limited edition. Numbered and classified." "That's..." she frowns. "May I borrow it? To read?" "You're on the inside now. Just don't leave it on the bus." She pulls the book down, shoves a bundle of crumpled jeans to one side of my bed to make room, and perches on the end of it. Mo, in dress-up mode, turns out to be a grown-up designer version of hippie crossed with goth. Black velvet skirt, silver bangles, ethnic top. Not quite self-consciously pre-Raphaelites, but nearly. Right now, she's destroying the effect completely by being 100% focused on the tome. "Wow." Her eyes are alight. "I just wanted to see if you're, like, getting ready. Only now I don't want to go. I'm going to be up all night." "Just remember, we need to be out the door by 7 o'clock, I remind her. "Allow 2 hours for getting to Luton and check-in." "I'll sleep on the plane." She closes the book and puts it down, but keeps one hand on the cover, protectively close. "I haven't seen you around much, Bob. Been busy?" "More than you can imagine," I say. "Setting up scanners that will slurp through the laundry's UPI and Reuters news feeds and page me if anything interesting comes up while I'm away. Reading the manual for field operations. Avoiding my guilty conscience." "How about you?"